Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another meeting of the EdTech Club from TCEA. And this week, I want to start with a little thought experiment. So, imagine you're the tech director at a pretty big school district. And hey, maybe you are, so maybe this thought experiment isn't that hard. But imagine you're this tech director, and imagine your community has just approved a $190 million bond package to help you overhaul all of your aging buildings, your aging infrastructure, including $30 million for technology upgrades district-wide. Okay, so in this scenario, hypothetically, you might be very excited, but once that initial excitement wears off, you might also be a little concerned. That's a tall order. That's completely restructuring the technology infrastructure of your school district. So, how do you approach major technological transformations? Well, that's the question we're asking this week, and our guest speaker is going to speak to that exact scenario because it happened to him.
My name is Tim Klan. I'm the Director of Technology for Livonia Public Schools in Michigan. We're a suburb just outside of the Detroit area, about 15,000 students.
So we're talking big picture tech transformation. We're talking how you can get that done by using the resources you already have in your district. We're going to talk about how you might host a kind of conference or even an annual conference to keep your educators up on technology. And we're going to talk about why food trucks are so important to the process. All of that and more is coming up in this meeting of the EdTech Club, and it all starts right now. Hey, everybody. I'm Andrew Rausch. Welcome back to another meeting of the EdTech Club, the podcast from TCEA, where we talk all things education and technology. And this week, we're talking with Tim Klan about technological transformation on a big district-wide scale. So let's jump right into it. Our interview with Tim Klan.
What kind of a project are we talking about here when we talk about this transformation?
Well, obviously, that's going to look a little different in all districts, just depending on what their initiative is, what the funding source, maybe more to the point. In our case here, it was a district bond that had passed for $190 million to do renovate essentially all 25 buildings in our district. And $30 million of that was dedicated to technology. So when that passed, that actually passed in 2013, but it was a five-year project that started in 2014. We quickly were put in a position to realize that that's a lot of money to spend on technology in a district that hadn't had an update in a while, and we had to find a way to effectively set up some training on a pretty large scale that would be able to get this information out to the teachers as effectively as possible in a fairly short period of time.
Mm-hmm. That does sound like a challenge, both kind of technically and in terms of communicating and making sure that everyone's on the same page. So how did you approach that?
Well, I actually started with the district in 2014, just shortly after the bond had passed. So I kind of stepped into it, at the very beginning of the renovations that were taking place. So I started in April in 2014 here, and our first wave of renovations was happening that summer. So we began with trying to decide what was the best way to get this information out to our staff, some of which were going to be coming back to it in that fall of 2014. So we knew that we wanted to do some sort of a large scale training, which in all districts, no matter what size the district, it's difficult to develop a way to train your staff cost effectively without, either having to pay them and pay subs and pay a vendor to come in and help you implement. And in this case, we had so many different new systems going in that we started talking about having a conference to handle this. It just seemed like a good way to allow the teachers to attend multiple sessions on, you know, in some of the areas that interested them most. But obviously we were going to have to develop it ourselves, and, you know, that's a challenge in and of itself. So.
And so you were changing the physical infrastructure, but that was going to necessitate a lot of new technological systems that you had to get teachers and staff up on, basically.
Right. Right. And as we talked about it more, that first year was a quick turnaround that we had to be able to pull together staff and to put this together and have it happen in a building that hadn't been renovated for technology yet. So to set it up to allow them to be able to be trained on the new technology when it didn't yet have it was a whole other challenge. But essentially, we only had one building in the district that would be able to handle a session or a conference of this size and be able to have all, you know, 1,200 staff there at one time. So, you know, the planning process that went into that, I mean, there's obviously several areas that we had to get through in a very short amount of time, you know, including even just something as simple as a theme, you know, what we were going to call it, how were we going to present it, how we were going to market it to the staff, because not only did we have to get them on board with it, but we had to get them on board to the point because we needed them to essentially be the trainers for a lot of it. So we had to bring them up to speed. Some of them, you know, had sessions that they had done for other events. We had some tech events in the past. So we basically tapped into some of our own staff that we knew had the ability to handle some of this stuff up front. If we could get them some of that technology in advance and let them start playing around with it a little bit, we knew that they'd run with it and be able to set up some sessions for, you know, the staff that were coming in the fall that would be new to a lot of this. So again, luckily it was the first year of four or five. So we had a little bit of flexibility in that we could focus on the teachers that were going to be getting the new technology that year, bringing them up to speed in certain sessions while having other sessions for everyone else that were all technology related, but maybe not quite as specific as the ones that were going to have, you know, certain new technologies in their classroom that year, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So as you're thinking, we have this massive tech infrastructure change. We're going to need to get everyone up to speed. We should organize this event for everyone. But even through that process, and even before you get to this conference you're putting together to catch up all the educators on this, you're working with teachers along the way so that some of them can become experts earlier.
Correct.
And so that must be, how does that affect the outcome of an event? I mean, I guess that leads into, tell us a little bit about how you put together this conference and what it was like.
Okay. Well, you know, along those same lines, number one is assembling the team that can handle this type of event and help us. I mean, we started with our curriculum department. Luckily, the curriculum department and the technology departments had a very close working relationship at that time. We have media specialists in all our buildings still who are typically very tech savvy. So we knew those were going to be great partners in this because not only do they have some great talents, but they know the great talents in their buildings that we could tap into to use for this type of an event. So we knew we had our communications department that could help us push information out and advertise it to get people to sign up for presenting. We really strongly encouraged people to not only present on their own, but oddly enough, sometimes teachers are a little hesitant to present to their own staff. You sure. know, they're fine in front of kids sometimes, but they're a little hesitant sometimes to get up in front of their peers and present. So we encourage them to present in teams or groups as well. Sometimes they felt a little more comfortable doing it that way. So I think that helped to kind of get the ball rolling, was getting that team together to get it, I'm trying to think of how to say this, basically to get it started. Mm-hmm. And then I felt like once it started and we had the support of the people within the buildings, that really helped it get moving and pick up steam. And I feel a lot of times from a staff perspective, they're not always thrilled with professional development that goes on. They sometimes struggle with, you know, was this effective? Did it really help me? And once we pushed this out there as an idea, I think it picked up steam rather quickly, because I think people felt like it was going to be a great event, and people were going to be able to focus on and go to the sessions that they were excited about. And especially with some of the guest speakers that we had lined up or that we had talked to, that was something that they were all excited about too, because typically they were people that they might not get to see other than at some big name conference.
And so what is the outcome of this? So you decided on the approach that you need to get this information out to everyone.
Yeah.
You organize this conference, you even pull in guest speakers, you get faculty and staff involved all the way throughout. So what were the outcomes like, and how did that help fuel that transformation?
Well, the outcomes were very positive. We were surprised at how good the feedback was that we got. And I think part of that was due in part to the fact that we had a lot of partners in this helping us, some of the vendors and local companies that were even, you know, everybody from the companies that were doing the wiring and that helped us get the classrooms in that building set up with some of that technology that was going to be trained on. Google and Microsoft were big in that. Google brought in some devices and helped us. Epson, we were outfitting basically 1,200 classrooms with the Epson BrightLink interactive projectors. And that was going to be a big change for people, because essentially to that point, the best anybody had were some portable projectors that sat in the middle of the room on a cart with extension cords running out to them. And so this was a big change for them. And so Epson brought in some of their people to help do some of the training in the classrooms, which was great. That went over really well. One of the more popular sessions that we had, multiple sessions at a time throughout the day, and basically all of them were standing room only. We also had, you know, new student information system, a new website coming online at that time. So we had sessions set up for that. You know, the feedback that we got, oddly enough, for not only the sessions themselves was great, but a lot of them were saying, you know, this is some of the best professional development we've had. Very relative and pertinent, and, you know, when are we getting our stuff? The biggest complaint we had was from the ones that maybe weren't getting all the stuff that everybody, you know, some of the other buildings were that first year, because there's just no way you can get it to everybody all at once. And the other thing I have to mention too is that probably the most popular part of the entire session were the food trucks. So obviously you can put on a session like this for everyone, but logistically speaking, how do you feed 1,200 people right, in a fairly short period of time when you're trying to do this on a budget? I mean, we had our staff were our speakers and our presenters. We hired in some larger name keynote speakers. So we had Adam, one year we had Adam Bellows, we had George Kuros, Eric Scheninger, different years. And so that was probably our largest expense. But the food trucks were great, because we were able to bring in 5-6 trucks that were set up in a courtyard area outside. And then we kind of split the conference up into a couple of lunch sessions, so to speak, and basically for 2-2.5 hours out there, it was packed, and everything from wood-fired pizzas to ice cream was available and the staff could do it right there on site and not have to try to get away, find a local restaurant and get back to the conference in time. So that was, you know, that was the funniest part, is I feel like that was the biggest hit. They felt like they got to sit with their colleagues and have lunch, and it was, you know, luckily the weather stuck with us most of the time, which in Michigan is not always the easiest thing to predict. But that was, like I said, that was one of the biggest hits we had. And I feel like that also helped make it a more positive experience in general, because I think that had the ability to go really poorly, which if you have a bad food experience, I feel like sometimes they tie that back into the whole conference and can put a negative spin on it. So.
And so you have this massive, you know, infrastructure level technology change. Mm-hmm. 5 years ago, you approach it with this solution of creating a big learning environment in a conference for your educators to keep them up to date to advance their professional development, especially on a bunch of new systems. But you've continued to train this way as an instructional technology department. You've kept this approach.
Yes, we started that in 2014, and we had to stop just recently. The last 2 years we had to not do it because that location was one of the final, that high school was one of the final locations to get the full renovation. And that auditorium specifically was going to be a 2 year renovation. So we lost it, and it's the only location we had large enough in the district to be able to run it. So we're hoping to be able to do it again this year now that that's back online again. But yeah, it was painful to a lot of people to not have that to come back to at the end of the summer.
And I guess the conference comes up as a reaction to a basically rebuilding a school district. What has kept it going over the last few years, and why do you want to keep it going into the future, even once all these renovations and these new systems are in place?
Well, obviously those systems are going to be ever changing. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, we have more of a plan in place to try to maintain and cycle things out a little more frequently. We've officially closed out that bond, and we're already starting to work on preparing for another bond to do some additional technology changes and some additional building renovations, certain parts of certain buildings that didn't get renovated. But it's kind of hard not to continue it. It was so popular and so well received that I feel like we would definitely hear about it if we didn't continue it. And it kind of picked up speed and momentum, and people would get excited about setting up their presentations for the next year. At the end of whatever year it was, we would have kind of a debrief session, reading through some of the reviews to make notes for the following year. And then we would kind of immediately just jump right back in, and we'd have people signing up for the next year's sessions already, and things that they wanted to present. And I think the beauty of this system that we've set up here essentially is that it can be done at any sized district. I mean, we've got 15,000 students and 25 buildings, but I think you could do this at a district with any number. It's just a matter of what you want to do for, you know, you may not want to spend the money to have a big keynote speaker come in, but you could still have the superintendent do a kickoff meeting, making some announcements for what they want to do. Curriculum and technology could make some presentations and announcements in a smaller auditorium for a smaller group of people, and then have whatever size group of teachers you have put together some sessions and presentations, and just let the staff break out and go to different, you know, whatever session interests them. It's just that in our case, we have more people, but we had to have more sessions to handle it. You could do it in any range of staff size, I think, and it would be successful. I just feel like it's just a matter of planning it out and making sure you've got the right number of sessions to handle the right number of people.
Mm-hmm. And there are undoubtedly folks who sit in your seat at school districts across the country. They have differing budgets. They have differing levels, of course, of material support, but also just funding structures they can rely on. So obviously there's going to be a broad diversity in the way districts approach technology transformation, new technologies, new systems. From your experience, what are the big picture lessons that you've learned from this process that started with this new infrastructure 5 years ago and has kind of informed the way you're doing professional development? What are the general lessons you would give to people in your position across the country?
Well, you know, I think keeping it as simple as possible, I think a lot of us at this level struggle with, you know, we are somewhat forced into adopting and adapting and creating new systems. And because everything we work with on a daily basis is changed quite frequently, not through necessarily our own choices, but through Microsoft, Google, everything else, things are constantly changing and being updated. And our staff don't always have the opportunity to keep themselves up to date on their own when they're teaching regularly. You know, some of them are the early adopters and they grab right onto it. But, you know, we struggle quite often with how do we present this material? How do we get this material to staff? How do we train them? Because we're not always given the opportunity or the time or the money to be able to provide large scale training or any training for that matter to our staff. So in our case, you know, this was our opportunity to put that information out there, to get people started using it, get them interested in it. And I know they don't come away with everything that you cover in these sessions, but if they see the things that they can do and they get excited about it, then we would also then provide materials on the outside, whether it be training documentation, support documentation, short videos, links to support videos. I know, as an example, Epson had a great support series on their website for the Brightlink Interactives that we were using, to just short series of short videos that the teachers could watch to learn how to use that technology a little better or to refresh themselves if they had been to the training. So I feel like it's something that we can do that's not incredibly expensive. It can actually be done very inexpensively. And as long as there is some district buy-in to get the time, the professional development time, typically at the start of the year we find is best because there's usually some professional development days carved out in there. That's the best time to try to squeeze it in. It's difficult to do it sometimes during the year when things get rolling, but you know, I that's why I encourage this as a great option. We've definitely been successful with it, and I think if we can do it, anybody can do it.
Okay, that's all the time we have for this meeting. Of course, you do have a little homework coming out of this. There are some links, articles, and useful pieces of information in our show notes, so go check those out at tceea.org/podcast or in your podcast player. And while you're there, go ahead and leave us a review. Don't forget to subscribe, spread the word. And by the way, this is a really good time to spread the word about the EdTech Club on social media. Look for TCEA. Because next week, there's no EdTech Club meeting. No, sir. Next week is our annual TCEA convention and exposition in our hometown of Austin, Texas. In fact, it's our 40th year doing this event. It's going to be a big one with more than 7,000 educators and ed tech enthusiasts, hundreds of exhibitors showing off the latest tools, and of course, thousands of sessions, some of them led by incredible featured speakers. And guess what? We are interviewing those featured speakers on this program, the EdTech Club. We're recording live at TCEA Convention and Exposition next week, February 3rd through 7th, 2020. So if you're listening to this episode when it comes out, just know that we're going to have a placeholder next week But after that, we're going to start rolling out all our live interviews with our featured speakers from conventions. So if you can't make it to Austin for the event, don't worry. You'll still be able to get some of that wisdom. And if you're a fan of the EdTech Club and you want to bring more members into the club, now would be a great time to spread the word, because we have tons of great content coming up in the coming weeks. And you know what? I think I'll give you a little extra credit for that. Go out there, get some folks subscribed to the EdTech Club, and get ready. So stay tuned, stay subscribed, and spread the word about the EdTech Club. Of course, keep up to date with what we're doing here at TCEA, especially during convention, on social media. Just look for TCEA, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all your favorites. And of course, check back here in 2 weeks with the first of our live recordings from convention. And by the way, if you will be at our convention and exposition, you can hear Tim Klan speak on exactly this topic in person, get to talk to him, ask questions. So if you're interested in this and you are going to convention, you can see this discussion. His talk on implementing training for a large-scale technology initiative is on Wednesday, February 5th at 11:45. So if you're coming to convention, make sure to check that out. And make sure to come to some of our live podcast recordings and say hi. Let us know that you're part of the EdTech Club. Okay, so that's it. We are wrapped up for this week. And until our next meeting of the EdTech Club, I'm Andrew Rausch. Thanks for being a part of the club. EdTech Club is a production of TCEA. To learn more and to join, go to tcea.org.